Sports Animal and Fox 43 Sports in Knoxville. This is Tennessee Sports Night.
Well, good Tuesday evening, everybody. Welcome into Tennessee Sports Night with Will West. I am Eric Kane. You can hear us 6 to 9 every single morning right here on the Sports Animal with the starting lineup alongside that guy who was on the roof for a couple of days, Tyler Robbins. But Will, a long day here for you today, but appreciate you taking some time after your afternoon shift.
Yeah, did a Triple H intertate as well. So, it's the three-peat. That's what we're going for right now on Tennessee Sports Night.
It's going to be a good show. We're going to talk about the Tennessee-Alabama game, doing a little recap of that as well. Talk about the Heisman frontrunners in college football. World Series Game 1 is tonight. We're going to preview that and get you out the door with Last Call, reviewing Monday Night Football. And NBA season officially starts here tonight. It's like opening day for you. That's one of the best days of the year for you and Josh Horst.
I like the NBA. It's 82 games is still pretty long, so I'll peek in around Christmas and then pay attention to the dunk contest, and then down the stretch, let's see what happens in the playoffs.
Not as long as baseball season.
It's not, but anything over 12 in my attention span wanes.
So Tennessee and Alabama for the 13th straight season, the Crimson Tide take the cigar game, this being in Tuscaloosa, 21-10 ball game at the half. Alabama runs away at the end, 35-13 the final score. But a lot of pauses for this ball game. Tennessee, it was a game of what ifs and buts, but a chance right there on the goal line. Could have been a one-score game with 7 minutes and some change in this ball game. But at the end of the day, it's a 22-point loss for the Volunteers. Will West, the biggest reason for Tennessee falling again to Alabama?
I think it was Brian Maurer's injury. Now, don't get me wrong. If Tua's there, Alabama probably makes that whatever score that they want that to be. But Tua wasn't there. So if you have Brian Maurer out there, I do think Tennessee probably at least has one more touchdown on the board. The officiating was not great. The Daryl Taylor penalty was tough. But at the end of the day, look, the game was closer than what the final score said. You did have the 100-yard touchdown, fumble return for a touchdown that was taken in by Alabama, which tacked on another score. You had the Daryl Taylor penalty, which caused Alabama to continue a drive after what would have been their second three and out in a row. Instead, they get a touchdown the other way. So it's virtually a 14-point swing that's there that happens there. And if that's the case, Tennessee loses in kind of a close one. Ifs and buts, like you said. There's a lot of that happened in that game. But you got to walk out of that game against Alabama at Alabama feeling awfully good about the way your team's playing football right now, especially on both sides of the line of scrimmage.
You just look, we'll talk about some pauses here in a second. But at the end of the day, and I agree, the officiating was not good. Jeremy Pruitt touched base on it on Monday saying, hey, you know, it's not like they go out there and they try to do a bad job. He really handled it very well, said all the right things that you would want in a head football coach if you're an athletic director, if you're a president of the university. He said that he has full confidence in Steve Shaw and all the SEC officials, but there were some calls that went against Tennessee that affected the game. Could it have affected the outcome? He doesn't know about that, and no one does. But there were certainly some calls in big situations in that game. We referenced the stoppage of the clock with the Wildcat when Tennessee shifts out to the Wildcat and the refs blow it dead. The 1 second that ran out the clock when Alabama was driving right before the half.
It should have been 3 and change, I think is what I saw from social media where somebody actually timed that. It should have been 3 and change. Now, they still kicked and missed the field goal either way. Yeah. So it's not that like that's the end of the world. I don't want to say, look, the officiating didn't cost Tennessee the game.
Absolutely.
Brian Maurer's injury didn't cost Tennessee the game. It cost them the chance to win the game. I would look at that. The thing overall why Alabama beat Tennessee is talent disparity. Mm-hmm. That's why Alabama beat Tennessee at the end of the day. But I do think if Brian Maurer's out there, especially when Tua goes down, Tennessee's got a chance to be in that game and maybe even pull off the upset in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, he looked sharp. He was 5 of 7, had over 50 yards, threw a nice back shoulder fade to Palmer down the sideline. And hey, you're seeing spurts and spurts of him. He could just stay on the field. It'd been very interesting to see how that ball game went along. But you mentioned the Daryl Taylor penalty as well. A lot of people didn't believe it was a penalty, but still, well, Alabama marches down the field and scores.
They
still marched down 60 plays or 60 yards on about 5 or 6 plays and score a touchdown.
And I would say this, there's not a soul that watched that Daryl Taylor penalty in real time that is being objective that didn't think it was a penalty. But then when you saw the replay, you realize, okay, that should not have been a penalty at all. But we all thought in real time it was. Yep. So, and I'm glad Todd McShay said that during the broadcast because he's right. In real time, we all thought that was a penalty. Then you watch that review and you realize, oh, we didn't push Mac Jones down. Jones just kind of slumped down.
Yep.
And Taylor happened to have one of his hands on him and one of his hands was not touching him as he's getting up.
Some positives for Tennessee. One of the big ones, Tim Jordan, a 94-yard performance. Tennessee ran for 114 yards. Still were out rushing the ball game. You want to see Tennessee run for more yardage, but this was the most rushing yards tallied against Alabama since 2015 when Jalen Hurd had 94 of himself. Tim Jordan came across, was moving the pile, and said postgame that, you know, it's all the credit to the offensive line. He continues just to work hard and trying to take advantage of his opportunity. He had a 33-yard run, Will, on that one 33-yard run in the second half, I believe. That was more rushing yards total that Tennessee had against Alabama in 2016 and in 2018.
Well, and so here's the big question when I see that. When I see the way that you were able to run the ball, mm-hmm. when I see the way you were able to limit Alabama's offense when Tua wasn't on the field, in your opinion, do you think Tennessee turned a corner in that game?
I do. I like the way Tennessee did not look scared of the moment or the team. Tennessee, the last couple of weeks is, you know, well, Florida was, well, the situation looked like a little bit too big for, you know, maybe Ron Mallory came in. But, you know, the way Tennessee performed against Mississippi State, but the way Tennessee got punched in the mouth right out of the gate against Alabama and punched right back.
Yeah.
You know, the way the line of scrimmage moved, you saw White attacking Crimson at the line of scrimmage. Trey Smith mentioned, you know, that run where Tennessee just continued to pepper and push the line of Tim Jordan. So that's the type of play that changes a culture in a program, and that's what Jeremy Pruitt has been preaching. So I do think Tennessee could have turned a corner. Now, you've got to finish strong on the season. Last year, the Volunteers did not.
They fell apart.
I guess
yeah.
This is a TBD. We can look back and say that play, that game, a corner was turned.
You kept building on momentum, right? The momentum, the belt, kind of whatever in that off week between Florida and Georgia, and Georgia's just a better football team than Tennessee.
Yeah.
And they built on that and were able to knock off Mississippi State. And they built on that and were able to play with Alabama, especially at the lines of scrimmage, for a good portion of that game. Really, for the majority of that game. I do think, look, if Tua's out there the whole time and healthy, it's a different game altogether.
Obviously,
he was, what, 11-12 with one no touchdowns, one interception. That interception was Tua saying, I can get whatever I want to whenever I want to, and he got a little greedy.
Yeah.
But he was throwing the ball at will, and it also set up the running game. So, again, if Tua's there, it's not like Tennessee goes out and hangs with Alabama at full strength, but Tennessee wasn't at full strength either. And so Tua wasn't there, and Tennessee did go out there and hang with them. And to be able to, with Mac Jones at quarterback, to be able to hang with Alabama, even if Mac Jones is the quarterback, you got to feel pretty good about that if you're Tennessee right now.
Absolutely. So I referenced earlier, it could have been a one-score football game with 7 minutes and change in the fourth quarter. Jerry Garantano fumbles the football. It's returned back 100 yards, as you see here on the television screen on Fox 43. And that was all she wrote. Will, got a couple minutes left. We're hearing the word rogue. When you hear the word rogue and Jerry Garantano, what's your reaction?
He probably did, if you want to say go rogue, yes. You know, afterwards you had both Pruitt and two of the players, Trey and Brandon Kennedy, say an audible was called. Yeah. But nobody else acted like an audible was called. And also when
miscommunication.
And so he looks right and yells something, and the linemen on the right side of the line start talking to each other. But then nothing else happens on that left side. So I don't know where he would have called an audible if he did audible in that one, because they hurried right up to the line and snapped the play. I don't believe this was going to be a touchdown either way. I know Jordan Rogers did the video on the SEC Network. Based on coaches I've spoken to and Ainge here, I don't think that's the case, that it was going to be a touchdown play because of the way Alabama ran their defense on that play. But I do think it was Jerry Garantano going a little bit rogue, yeah.
There was a clear miscommunication. There is a run play call. Jordan Rogers of the SEC Network and ESPN, a former player, he's breaking it down on your screen right now on Fox 43. And essentially, when the play rolls, the tackle and guard are blocking down, the tackle and tight end are blocking down. The Trey Smith, the guard, is pulling out and kicking the end man on the line of scrimmage. Austin Pope is your fullback. He is stepping at a 45-degree angle, and he's going to be your lead back. I agree with you here, and why I don't believe Tennessee would have scored, or Crouch would have at least been hit before the line of scrimmage, because there are two guys right there in that A-gap.
Yeah, two guys hit the A-gap. Yeah. And if two guys hit the A-gap, you're kind of screwed on that play. Now, the idea of two guys hitting the A-gap, who in the world thinks that's going to happen?
Mm-hmm.
It did, though, for Tennessee there, and that's why I disagree with Jordan Rogers that Tennessee would have scored easily.
Jerry Garantano did not come back into the ballgame after that play. Will he be Tennessee's starting quarterback against South Carolina on Saturday? We'll have to find out the rest of the week. More when we come back on Tennessee Sports Night.
This segment of Tennessee Sports Night is brought to you by United Grocery Outlet. Shop us first.
Welcome back in here to Tennessee Sports Night here on a Tuesday night. I'm Eric Gane alongside Will West here, and we welcome you back in. We're talking college football, the Heisman race. We are almost through 8 weeks of the college football season.
It flies,
up coming up on week nine. I mean, it's incredible right now. And there are some guys that are making some headway in the elusive Heisman Trophy race. We're going to start off with a couple of SEC or an SEC quarterback in Jake Burrow, second year player of LSU. Joe Burrow at LSU, second year with the Crimson, in Baton Rouge, coming from Ohio State. And the numbers he's putting up this year: 29 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, completing 79% of his passes. He's averaging nearly 12 yards per attempt. He's really taken off here in his final season of eligibility.
He really is, and he's been allowed to look. Joe Burrow was a game manager until this year, and so they go and get John Brady was the name of the guy that was the passing game coordinator at New Orleans with the Saints. Worked under Sean Payton to become the passing game coordinator with LSU right now. And this offense is unbelievably high octane. It is stupid, though, when you see video game numbers like this. Oh, yeah. It's like, raise the level of your competition if you're playing on NCAA football or Madden. 29 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. And we've seen things like that in recent past as well to Trevor Lawrence last year.
Yeah.
It's just insane that in the day, 30 touchdowns, 10 interceptions was a great year. Great year. And I don't mean that long ago. It was a great year. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, that was a great year. Now we're sitting 7 games into the LSU schedule, and Burrow's sitting with 29 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
What's incredible to me is LSU has always had a great team, just been missing a quarterback. And now with Joe Burrow, potentially could make some noise here. We're talking maybe the best team in the country right now. And what's impressive to me the most of anything, I hear you with the 29 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 79% completion percentage is incredible.
It is incredible. And I'll say this, LSU's always had talent. They've always had a really good defense, whether it was Aranda or if it was Chief or whoever it was. Mm-hmm. But they always wanted to be conservative offensively and protect their defense. And that's just a losing proposition in football in this day and age. And Ed Ogeron's, he's evolved.
Yeah,
good for him.
Another quarterback we'll talk about over in Norman, Oklahoma. 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. It is Jalen Hurts, another guy completing over 70% of his passes. Different about Jalen Hurts, he's got 20 touchdowns passing through the air, 10 touchdowns on the ground.
Yeah, is he going to pull Cam Manziel numbers? Is he going to hit 50 combined?
He looks like he's on pace potentially. Well, he'd have to rack it up just a little bit, but he's going to play a lot of games this year potentially. So,
and the other side of it, he has 700 yards rushing as well. That's the key with Jalen Hurts, is his passing numbers are similar to these other guys, and then add 700 plus yards rushing. Yeah. Now, with what we've seen with Kyler and what we've seen from Baker, it makes you think some of this is product of the system, but he's been able to step right in where those guys were and perform as well as those guys did, and they were the number one picks in the NFL draft the last 2 years.
If it comes down to Jalen Hurts and this next guy, a name you've heard of throughout college football the last 3 years, Tua Tagovailoa, what a story. Of course, Jalen Hurts, the starter at Alabama. Tua comes in, replaces him in the national championship game, and 2 years later now, Tua, he's going to miss this weekend against Arkansas, but 27 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, the last one coming on Saturday against Tennessee, 74%, and Tua's being Tua again.
Yeah, no, Tua's the most outstanding player in college football, period. Mm-hmm. What he does, I mean, Bobby Scott's been on the one since said, like, and it hurts him to say this about an Alabama player, said he's the most accurate college quarterback he's ever seen. The way he throws guys open, the way he hits guys in stride over and over again on deep balls, on crossing routes, on deep outs, whatever it might be, he just hits a guy exactly where he has to. You never see a guy have to adjust the Tua's ball to a ball the Tua's thrown. He's the best player in college football, period. Mm-hmm. But with this injury, it may end up that he doesn't end up winning the Heisman Trophy, though.
Our final quarterback on the list is Justin Fields. Again, 30 total touchdowns at Ohio State. Justin Fields, first year at Ohio State, coming from Georgia, now a sophomore. Probably in the back of these three up here, but still an outstanding season.
Yeah, he doesn't have close to the numbers those other guys do, right? The completion percentage is right there, around 70% or better. Mm-hmm. But the passing yards, just everybody's about 1,000 passing yards behind where Burrow and Tua are right now. So, and, you know, about 600-700 behind where Jalen Hurts is. So Fields has been fantastic, and a lot of that may just be he's the best quarterback on what may be the best team today. Mm-hmm. And that's going to give you a lot of equity when it comes to the Heisman voting committee.
Real quick. All these quarterbacks play for undefeated teams. Are these quarterbacks, all four of them, in the college football playoff?
No. One of Tua or Burrow won't be there, but the other two will.
All right, college football season, it rolls on, getting a lot of great quarterback play, but game one tonight, it's the World Series. Will and I are going to break it all down when we come back here on Tennessee Sports Tonight.
And now, back to Tennessee Sports Night on Fox 43 Sports and 99.1, the sports animal.
Well, it's fall classic time here in the baseball world, and you can catch the entire 2019 World Series right here on your television sets at Fox 43 here in Knoxville tonight. It is the Washington Nationals traveling to the Houston Astros. It's going to be Max Scherzer and Gerrit Cole. And when you look at this game one, game two,
that's a nice pitching matchup.
Game three, it's pitching, pitching, pitching. I am thrilled to watch this World Series. And again, it all starts tonight here in about 40 minutes.
Well, okay. Will this be a series that at the end of it, we will remember it because of the pitching, or will it be a series that we'll remember it because of timely hitting?
Well, I think it's funny because anytime you have this matchup and you're like, man, it's going to be dominant pitching, pitching, it's just like it's a home run parade. And so that's just kind of how crazy the postseason is.
But they're usually solo home runs and it ends up being like 6-4 or something like that.
And there's a lot of firepower in each of these lineups. You look at George Springer, Jose Altuve, 5'6", put Houston into the World Series, and what a great story he's been.
You got Bregman, his career. Correa
had a huge ALCS. And then you look at the other side, Anthony Rendon, which was an MVP candidate in the regular season. Looks like Trey Turner's healthy.
Zimmerman's still a good player.
And then Howie Kendrick, you up earlier this morning. You know, the postseason has a knack for bringing out players that, injury plague throughout the regular season, a little so-so, but boom, when those lights turn on the postseason, so does their bats.
So who's the Mark Lemke? Who's the, pregame starts of the World Series as soon as we sign off. Just found that out. That's nice. So who's the Mark Lemke? Who's the David Eckstein? Who's the David Freeze of this series?
Yeah, so we're going to find that out tonight. I mean, when you look at Washington, there's, you know, these so many utility players that rotate in and out. You know, Zimmerman's not really been an everyday player at all the times this season. He was the first draft pick for the Washington Nationals in franchise history. So, you know, he's going to play a big role as well. So, you know, it's finding these little guys throughout the series that will step in and have that big hit that you might not hear from, and then you'll become a fan of them throughout the rest of the way. And there's so many guys. Also,
or root against them and bang your head to the wall.
Exactly. Throwing out the first pitch tonight in the Astrodome as well, as it's going to be Brian McCann and Evan Gattis, former Braves teammates,
really,
that also won a World Series with Houston 2 years ago.
Okay, that's not bad at all. Okay, so Gerrit Cole versus Scherzer. Is that the best matchup we're going to have in this? Or tomorrow it'll be, or game two, we'll get Strasburg and Verlander, and then we'll get Corbin and Greinke for game three. Is it going to be about the starters, or will we talk more about the bullpens when it's all said and done? Because Washington's bullpen's been a little bit of an adventure this year, and maybe your starter can do a great job going 5-6 innings. Yeah. What happens in innings 7, 8, 9?
See, Dave Martinez has tried to keep his starters in for as long as he's playing, you know, traditional baseball. When you're trying to get 7 out of your starter, give it to a setup man and then have a closer slam.
I'm a fan of that.
Yeah, and I think any baseball blue blood is. You look at the numbers right there. Washington's had a subpar bullpen for the regular season. In the postseason, it's not been horrible, but it's not been good either. But it's got one of the fewest amount of innings pitched from its bullpen. You're getting a lot from Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin, and that's exactly what the doctor drew up. You look at Houston on the other end, the bullpen has pitched better and has pitched more as well. So you're seeing Houston go into the bullpen a little early and a little often. But I do think this is going to be a series to where we look back and we say, look at these starters and look how far they went.
And an argument we've gotten into a lot on the starting lineup has been Tyler and I saying this is not going to be no contest. Yeah. Astros are winning this, and you're like, no. Nationals could absolutely win this series. Why is that?
I think the Nationals can absolutely win this series because I think Anthony Rendon is incredible, and I think there's a lot of table setters in that lineup. But again, and I know Houston has it as well. Gerrit Cole, you know, arguably the best pitcher in baseball this entire year, what Justin Verlander has done with a couple of Cy Youngs. But when you line up and you have Scherzer, Strasburg, Corbin, and Anibal Sanchez has done well this postseason too. When you have those four guys, you can't just say, well, it's a no contest, because pitching can carry a team throughout the entire postseason, and you're seeing Washington, a wild card team, advancing all the way to the World Series.
Am I wrong to want to see Fernando Rodney more than anybody else pitching there, just because he's like 48 years old, and every time he gets out there, you have no idea what's going to happen whatsoever?
See, I don't think that Nationals fans want to see Rodney.
Okay.
Because he got blew up, you know, in the regular season.
And they keep rolling him out there. Let's be honest, he's been getting blown up for a decade, and people keep rolling him out there and giving him a contract.
He had that stretch where he was one of the most dominant closers in baseball, but that was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. All right, give me your prediction. Who wins and then how many games?
Give me the Astros in 6. I think the Astros are going to win this. The pitching's going to be too much. I think the Nationals' bullpen's too much of an adventure as well. And because of that, you're just going to see, I've watched these Astros take care of the Dodgers' suspect bullpen just 2 years ago. I think they do the same to the Nationals' bullpen.
Carbon copy. I like the Astros in 6 as well. I like the Nationals. I think the Nationals can win this series, but I do think Houston prevails in 6. Hey, that Monday Night Football game. Woo! We'll talk about it next on Last Call. Yeah, what game? Here on Tennessee Sports Tonight.
And now, back to Tennessee Sports Night on Fox 43 Sports and 99.1, the sports animal.
Well, Monday Night Football saw a really good team play a really bad team, and the really good team scored a lot of points, and the really bad team scored no points. Welcome back in here. Last call, Tennessee Sports Night. Will West, I am Eric Kane. Will, I mean, that was an abysmal game to watch, man. Oof. New England, that defense is incredible. The offense obviously is not bad. It was 33-0, and Sam Darnold, 5 turnovers, 4 interceptions.
11 of 32.
It's not great, Bob.
Second-year pro. It's not like he's a rookie. Danny Dimes is one thing. Seeing some of these rookies is another thing. But to see a second-year guy who's back from injury, played very well last week, just get lit up like that by the New England Patriots and just start throwing the ball up to who knows where. That was just a beating last night that New England put on the New York Jets, and not even a game at all, but we were all stuck watching until halftime, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, because we wanted to see the Star Wars trailer.
Thank you. The Star Wars trailer is exactly why I watched the entire game, why I continue to watch it through the half. The rich get richer. New England's offense is nothing to shout at, and you get Mohamed Sanu there for a second-round pick from Atlanta.
Bad. That is not bad at all. So, look, you're probably overpaying. I don't think there's another team in the National Football League that would have given the third for Sanu, but we're not going to rip the Patriots because we've seen them do things like this and pull guys off the scrap heap, and it worked so well for them, even though we've seen it not work as often as it does, but because they have been so successful with it at times, you know, we're all going to say, wow, what a great move. But now you add Mohamed Sanu to this wide receiving core, and you're thinking, are you kidding me? The rich get richer, right?
Another big move in the NFL today, Denver is shipping lifer Emmanuel Sanders, receiver, to San Francisco. And San Francisco badly needed just another target corps. And now you get that Emmanuel Sanders heading to a 9-0 football team.
Yeah, no, it's great because Sanders probably still has something in the tank. And he's not really being used right now. Look, if you're a team like the Denver, the Jets, the Falcons, you need to go ahead and just get whatever draft capital you possibly can. You're not going anywhere. Give up on this season, trade guys like Sanders and guys like Mohamed Sanu that you're not using anyway, and let them go somewhere and try to play it. So now for Emmanuel Sanders, he's got a little bit of life. And for San Francisco, didn't you think, like, I love George Kittle. I love the running game. I love the coaching job that Kyle Shanahan does. But didn't you feel like they were at least one receiver away?
Yeah.
From legitimately being able to be a team that makes the noise in the playoff, you had to have somebody you could hang your hat on that if they're in single coverage, I can go throw it to them and maybe they can make a play for me. Well, now they have that guy in Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah. You know, Jalen Hurts, who had a good preseason. He's been on injured reserve. Debo Samuel's kind of slow out of the gate.
Young guys too, right?
Yeah, young guys for sure. So this will certainly help Emmanuel Sanders to San Francisco 49ers. Hey, it's World Series time now here in Knoxville, Tennessee, here on Fox 43. Enjoy your World Series action. We'll see you tomorrow night on Tennessee Sports Night.